If you're brand new to Bitcoin, it's an educational place to learn.
That's right. We are trying to up the game when it comes to digital conferences. There are so many women who maybe have been sitting on the sidelines and are not sure where to start. So it's both for the newcomers as well as the amazing women that have been building in this space. We're open to anyone and everyone. It's a free event and we're so excited to host it for the first time. Of course, the world is moving away from U.S. bonds. Why would they hold our treasuries? They're not worth anything.
I love that you said armchair quarterback.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I mean, we see a lot of that online. The world is changing. The monetary system is changing. I had lost hope and Bitcoin changed all that for me.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Natalie Burnell here with me again. She joined me a few months ago. So now we're going to be talking about her new book, Bitcoin is for Everyone. Natalie is the host of Coin Stories. She's an awarded journalist. She is a first generation American. And she, of course, has written this new book for everyone to understand Bitcoin in a simple way. So, and it's a lot of your journey as a first generation American. So I'm excited to talk about that today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Great to see you.
Yeah, thank you. First, before we get into the book, I want to talk about the summit that you're hosting, the Women of Bitcoin Virtual Summit, and it's a global free event.
That's right.
It is a two-day thing, and it's nice for anybody, right?
That's right. We are trying to up the game when it comes to digital conferences. So I'm putting this together with Efrat Fenningson, who many of you know from the You're the Voice podcast, and Christine Marie Turner, who leads Abundant Minds with her husband, Bo. And they are a phenomenal duo. They're passionate about the same mission as me, which is to just see more representation in the Bitcoin space. There are so many women who maybe have been sitting on the sidelines. Maybe their partners are involved in Bitcoin or are not sure where to start. So it's both for the newcomers as well as the amazing women that have been building in the space who are working on education and leading companies and doing Bitcoin mining and advocating human rights. We're so excited to bring everyone together because, you know, Bitcoiners were dispersed around the world. So this is a chance for all of us to get together. It's going to happen over 2 days, March 4th and 5th. And it's actually going to have two tracks. It's going to be very interactive virtually. And so you can choose this panel or that panel, kind of pick your own adventure. And there's going to be interactive booths with our sponsors and the ability to learn based on the topics you're most interested in. And we are going to kick it off with a 101 panel just to get everyone kind of on the same page and welcome the newcomers to make them feel like, okay, if you are very new to Bitcoin, here's kind of the lowdown on what this is and why this is so important. And then we break off into these very curated, thoughtful panels with women from, again, around the world. So we're open to anyone and everyone. It's a free event and we're so excited to host it for the first time.
That is amazing. The first time. And will you be taking questions from participants too?
Oh, yes, there's going to be several Q&A sessions. We're going to do breakout rooms. Like this online production suite actually allows us to kind of break in and create virtual tables where you sit with people and chat and network, build community, learn more about certain topics, maybe get involved in working in the space. I mean, one of the things I love about Bitcoin events, whether they're in person or virtual, is you end up creating not just friendships, but also job connections and creating opportunities to work and contribute in the space. And that really happened to me too, because I went to a Bitcoin conference while I was a reporter about almost six years ago. And suddenly I'm working as a podcaster in Bitcoin. So anything's possible. You just have to get involved.
That's so inspiring. And just for women hearing that and just wanting to get involved in the space, knowing how early we are to Bitcoin really, and how, you know, there's just so much opportunity, so much room for growth. You know, you could do so much. You don't need to have a certain degree. Like you could do a million different things in Bitcoin. It's amazing what connections you can make when you actually, you know, get to talk to these people. So you said there's going to be virtual tables. Is that how it's going to be?
Yeah, there are these cool online software suites for virtual events that actually allow you to get very interactive and create like breakout rooms where you're chatting with a smaller group of people. Or again, you can choose between different panels. We're going to do big breakout rooms as well, where people can kind of digest what they just learned and meet each other. So it's going to be really exciting. I think it's also going to offer something special for the sponsors that are wanting to get out and share their services and businesses with the community. So I'm really excited. I've personally never attended this type of a conference. Usually, you know, you'll have like a live stream and that's pretty much it. This is going to be, we're taking it to the next level. We want to do this big and do this right. And we're also building on the momentum from the annual Women of Bitcoin brunches that I've been co-chairing with Callie Bailey. We're going to have our 5th anniversary for that this year in Las Vegas. So make sure to get your passes to Bitcoin 2026. You can use code HODL, H-O-D-L, for 10% off. And if you're staying at the Venetian, you will have first access to those special tickets for the Women of Bitcoin event. We're changing it up a little bit this year. It's going to be bigger and better than ever. I can't exactly share what yet. We'll share details soon, but I'm just so excited because every year that event has sold out. We bring together women of all ages, all backgrounds from all over the world, and they get to, again, build community, learn from one another, build friendships, network for career. And it's just the best thing. It leaves me feeling so full every time I do that event.
So nice. And it makes you feel like you actually do make these friendships, you know, career connections, but friendships. And, you know, you do feel sad, like not satisfied, grateful. You know, it's such a great feeling. So the tickets are not available yet.
For the virtual summit, registration's open. Again, it's free to everyone. So you can sign up now. It's on March 4th and March 5th. So bookmark it in your calendars. And then for the Women of Bitcoin event in Las Vegas, usually we release those tickets just a few weeks before the conference. And again, you will have first access if you're staying at the conference venue, which is the Venetian.
And is there a limited number of spots for the conference in Vegas?
For the conference, I don't think so. But for the women's event, we all always have a cap, unfortunately, just due to the venue size. The ballroom has a certain capacity. Mm-hmm. So yes, and we always sell out. So we really just want to, you know, make sure that women are aware that when the tickets go out, make sure to get yours because it does sell out.
How can they stay notified to make sure that they are aware?
Yeah, so I'll be sharing everything on my Twitter page. If you follow me at Nat Brunel, I'm also active on Instagram, on LinkedIn. So I'll definitely be sharing it. Don't you worry. I will make sure to be announcing when tickets are going to go on sale, and they will go on sale on the Bitcoin conference website.
That's my first conference was Vegas last year. So we met there. I got to meet you in Vegas before the book came out. So it's going to be nice going back and just seeing some more faces. I saw Efrat there, the one that's doing the summit with you, and it's going to be a great time, you know, just connecting with everybody. So I want to get into your book. You did such a great job, you know, highlighting the problems and the, you know, the false idea people have about the American dream and what they're sold. And I just think so many people relate, you know, with the title of your book being Bitcoin is for Everyone. So many people relate, not just in the US, not just as a first generation American, but globally, knowing that their leaders have stolen from them through inflation and make life harder for them. It's something everyone can relate to. So just like Bitcoin is for everyone, this book is for everyone. It doesn't have to be just in America. It's what leaders and what corruption does to your money.
Yeah, I mean, I really put my heart into this book. It's been a years-long journey. I'm really proud of it. I think it's a very simple and approachable introduction to Bitcoin for all the folks out there who, again, they don't know what it is. They're not sure about why this technology matters. Maybe they've been a little nervous, worried about dipping their toes in. I wanted to really be that first entry point that is positive. It's a very positive book. It's not political. It's not partisan. And that was important to me too, because I think when I look out, especially at social media and news at large today, which is the industry I come from, I just see so much negativity and so much division and people kind of preying on the division and sensationalizing it as much as possible. And I'm a true believer that we have so much more in common than we do that divides us. And we can place blame or we can just channel our energy at fixing the system. So my book actually focuses on why, you know, if you learn about the properties of money, why we ended up with sort of this fiat system where our dollar isn't backed by anything and keeps losing value because of some of the inherent flaws, for example, of gold, gold being physical, and we papered over it. And it doesn't place the blame on any group or organization or people. It just says, you know what, like humans are greedy. They will always be greedy. So we need to design a system that actually kind of flips incentives over and rewards value as opposed to rewarding greed, which is what I think our current system actually does. It doesn't reward the people that are working hard and saving for the future and doing the right thing, it rewards the people that are just closest to the money printer. So I try to, you know, introduce that in a very, very approachable way. And then I explain Bitcoin simply in a way that makes sense to me as a non-technical person. Leave it with a really strong note of hope that we can build something better together. And I think it can bring out the best in us. And money is like such a central force that drives our lives. And so if our money's broken, then everything else, you know, the second, third order effects mean everything else is broken too. So we need to address the root of the problem. And that's what I try to present in the book.
That's amazing. You really did a great job with it. You know, the cover of the book is bright and hopeful and cheerful. And, you know, Bitcoin is hope for the future. You know, you actually, you know, and hope is for everyone. There's no need to highlight political differences because from both sides of the aisle, you're right. Like there's no difference in what happens with the money. You know, there's still going to be greed everywhere you go and people are too focused on that. And there is hope. I think people are just so stuck from your side of things when you came from, you know, media and, you know, seeing all the negativity. It's true. People feed off of it. Like they like it because that's all they know. I think they're just used to pain and I don't know, they're addicted to it. But once you find Bitcoin and you find that there is this hope, you actually can change your mindset and believe in a better future, knowing that there is an answer and there are people like you who use your time to educate people, not just people, but women. There's such a small amount of women in Bitcoin and women could feel intimidated. So it's nice that you do these things that you're trying to bring and include everybody in and you know, make it feel comfortable for people to join and have a conversation.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I just think it's so important. And as a woman myself, like I like to learn or watch content from people that look like me, right? Like I like to learn from other women and network with other women and spend time with other women. So I'm just trying to be that voice that invites and welcomes others to the fray. And again, it really is for everyone. I've been so inspired by the people I've met, everyone from, you know, like executives that have run public companies for decades to 80-year-olds that are putting Bitcoin in self-custody to Gen Zers who know that the system is so broken and they've been on the end of it where all of this burden is on them financially as a generation and they want to break out and embrace this freedom technology. So it's just really exciting because like I've never met so many fascinating, interesting, intelligent people from all walks of life.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Anybody, no matter what age, you're going to need a solution. You know, there's the young people need it so badly. I mean, I have kids myself, and that's how I got started in Bitcoin, thinking about how I'm going to support them, you know, and it was a scary thought, you know, and you don't want to have to support your kids. You want your kids to thrive, but you just don't even know how to guide them in a world where you don't see an answer. So it was just nice having this as a parent, you know, solution. And there's so many moms out there and being this voice for women to inspire other women to speak up. And it's a ripple effect. It's just the bravery and the leadership that you show is something that inspires women to do that. So it's just great for anyone, but for women that are so underrepresented in Bitcoin, it's amazing to see.
Well, I thank you. I appreciate your kind words. And it's really fun to see also that Bitcoin touches so many different industries and topics as well. So I have met so many, both men and women who really love health, right? They want to embrace health and make sure to get the pesticides and chemicals out of our food. And like that has a Bitcoin component to it, like the financial aspect that has destroyed incentives and destroyed really the industries at large of healthcare, medicine, food. And so it's fun to connect those dots because you meet people that, again, like there's so many interesting folks who have different levels of expertise or different industries or skill sets that they came from. And there's always like a touch point with Bitcoin that tells you there's this bigger picture of we can sort of fix everything if we fix the money. We can also fix the food. We can fix healthcare. We can realign incentives so that there's more of an incentive to provide value as opposed to just, you know, try to siphon away, extract away money from especially the working class, which is what we've seen happen over so long. And in the book, I share that I went through a transformation with Bitcoin where I had lost hope and I felt like I would never be able to afford a family or plan for retirement or own like the house, have the American dream that I pictured when I was young and that my parents sacrificed so much to come here for. And Bitcoin changed all that for me. And now I have so much hope. And I feel like it's a feedback loop too, like where if I see hope, I end up meeting other people that are very hopeful and positive. And then that like makes me feel even more hopeful, right? And it's like a positive reinforcement. Whereas I feel like when I was working in news and seeing all the negativity, it was always a negative feedback loop of like, things are just getting worse. There is no solution. We're going to break apart more. Like, this is just going in the wrong direction. And I felt the pressure that so many people do of just, how am I going to survive? Like, paycheck to paycheck, what am I going to do? And that, I think, leads to so many broken aspects of society, like morality, mental health issues, because we start to break apart. We're thinking about survival, and we no longer even consider some of the consequences, especially the long-term consequences of our actions. And Bitcoin reverses all of that. It makes you stop and think about the future, because you're finally able to sort of plan for it if you're economically empowered, right? And you think about, okay, well, if I can do this, what can I create? What can I build? Can I start the family? Can I get the home? Can I start the business? Can I take a risk on this idea that I have? I just think it's so exciting when you have a world where people feel like they're not drowning. Mm-hmm. And that's what I hope Bitcoin offers people.
Of course. And yeah, it's definitely that fear versus safety feeling, because when you're in that negative place of work or the media, it's all scare tactics and it's all fear. And it just reminds me of sometimes how you said when you have the positive feedback loop and you're around positive people, like how you're affected by your surroundings and your body actually reacts to the world around you. I think of people who, you know, worry when it comes to even having children. You know, you think that there's something wrong and you can't have kids, but then it's because you're stressed and you don't realize you're stressed and your body's having issues. And then all of a sudden, you know, you stop thinking about it or something takes your mind off of it and then you're pregnant. You know, it's like you don't realize what effects it has on your health, you know, and all these things. So that's why, you know, Bitcoin just connects, like you said, like connecting all these dots and finding truth in the world is something that Bitcoin just kind of, that's our principle. You know, once you understand Bitcoin, you just want truth in all parts of your life.
Oh, I completely agree. That was so well said.
Thank you. That's what I love about this space is that everybody does podcasts or whatever they do, seminars, conferences, all these things, because you enjoy being around the people, you enjoy seeing what's being built, you enjoy seeing hope, and it does attract more people and some of the brightest people in the world, which are fascinating people to get to meet. And that's what I love about doing this so much. The other thing is how you grow up and seeing the whole American dream thing and your family and stuff. That part really was emotional for me too, because I relate to that a lot. I'm also a first generation American. It is from Greece. Yeah. So my parents are from Greece and they worked hard their whole life, like your parents, you know, they did everything right. And I think that's the hard part, because you feel like now it's on you, sort of. I don't know if you felt like that, like when you notice that your parents are, you know, you're supposed to be the kid, your parents are supposed to kind of take care of things. But then when things go wrong, you start to feel like now I have to be the adult here and, you know, help them. And that's kind of the role that I took on in my life was, they felt like they were not sure financially what to do about anything. So I feel like I had to take over that aspect. And then it was a lot of fear until I found out what was really going on. And I think with you, I love that you went into investigative journalism because of that, because you wanted to figure it out. Like, you were trying to understand what the heck went wrong when you see your parents working so hard. You know, it's just cool that that's the pain is the way your life, you know, on this journey, you know?
I mean, not a lot of people know this, but when I was in college, I went into college thinking that we had kind of achieved this modest American dream and I was just going to work hard. And so I knew I wanted to be a journalist because I grew up watching Barbara Walters and all that. And I talk a little bit about this in the book. But when I was in school, I thought, oh, I want to be like a travel correspondent. I want to be like Anthony Bourdain, or I want to travel and show people the world and talk about different cultures and tell stories from around the world. And then the great financial crisis hit and it really upended my family. And my whole life changed at that point. And I saw my parents go from two people who also had hope for the future in this country that they came to and had big dreams for their children and were working so hard, to all of a sudden, like, we just lost our house. My dad lost his job. Like, we don't know what to do. And it was a really scary moment for me. So I think that did light a fire, because I went off into the journalism career track and I was like, this system is unfair. Like, this is so unfair that the bankers get bailed out and people like my family lose their homes. I mean, some of the bankers got bonuses the years of the financial crisis. Like, isn't that crazy? And so I really understand the populism that we saw back then and we're seeing again now, these calls for like, it's unfair. You know, they want to tax the rich. I did too before I understood what economics really, like economic theories were and what capitalism is, what free markets really were. And so I too placed the blame sort of in the wrong place. And I didn't understand that we have a centrally controlled form of money, which is not capitalism, right? So like if the price of money, the interest rates could be set by an organization and they control the actual supply of money and can print units into that system out of thin air, which go directly into banks, which I explain in the book, that's a system that is definitely not capitalism. That's almost socialism for the banking sector, where no matter what they do and no matter what risks they take, they're going to get bailed out by us. We're going to socialize the losses. The taxpayers are going to foot the bill. And they basically sit there and get wealthier and wealthier and collect fees and collect the bailouts. And like, that's no wonder people are so frustrated and they see Wall Street as sort of this elite, corrupt group, right? I get it. And so I try to unpack again that like this is because of how our monetary system was designed and created. And with Bitcoin, it's decentralized. It has a finite supply that you cannot inflate and manipulate. And it really solves for so many of these issues. Until I understood that, again, I also place the blame on the wrong places. And so I'm really grateful for my years as an investigative reporter because A, I felt like I did get to hold some powerful people accountable, but also I learned so much and was able to take the skills of communication and storytelling. And when I was ready, when I finally found Bitcoin, apply it to Bitcoin. And I love meeting fellow immigrants and people that came from immigrant backgrounds because we do always have so much in common. And no matter where the families came from, it's again like that grit and that determination that brought them here in order to give their kids a better life. Like a lot of it is really self-sacrificing where they are now, they're not able to achieve everything that they wish they could have when they were younger, but their children are. So I feel the same way that you probably do, where I feel like I'm living out my mom's American dream. And I really like the motivation and ambition for me working. I basically work 7 days a week comes from the fact that I want to take care of my parents now because it was too late for them to kind of rebuild after the great financial crisis. So it's really on me. And they didn't place that burden on me. I placed it on myself. But like, this is one of the reasons why I need Bitcoin to work.
Exactly. Because,
I want to take care of them so that they don't ever have to worry. And it kind of makes me emotional talking about it. But it's also crazy to think about, you know, places like Greece and other countries where immigrants and refugees came from, because those countries, some of them have faced these massive currency crises, right? But they don't print the reserve currency. So in the case when there's problems at the financial level with any other country, the IMF and the World Bank step in and they offer loans at interest rates that sometimes are very high. And what do? They start to extract resources. They impose austerity measures. But we don't do that to ourselves. When the great financial crisis hit, we didn't go into austerity. We didn't let the banks fail. We didn't ship out, you know, our precious resources somewhere. No, we bailed ourselves out. And so I think like we need to zoom out at sort of the big picture, because here we are about 15 years after the great financial crisis. And of course, the world is moving away from U.S. bonds, U.S. treasuries, because they no longer trust us. They know we're just going to print money out of thin air. We're going to basically pay off our debt with money that we print. And so why would they hold our treasuries? They're not worth anything. Mm-hmm. And so I think people need to pay attention to that, because the world is changing. The monetary system is changing. And that's why so many people have fled to gold recently. But I think that in the future, they will find that Bitcoin is way better than gold. It is the digital gold that we need for a globally connected world.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's something that, you know, with what happened in Greece, I remember that, but I wasn't aware. I mean, the age that I was when it happened, I remember hearing all the stories like Greece's currency collapsed and they went to the euro. And, you know, I remember using the drachmas, like the Greek money, when I would go there and when I was younger, and then it's gone. Now it's all euros everywhere. So it's just crazy how a switch like that could happen. And it's crazy how, you know, because the US is a world reserve currency, there's no consequences for anybody. There's consequences for everyone but the money printer, you know, and it's consequences for every American but the ones closest to the money printer. So It's like a very lopsided, unfair consequence system. So Bitcoin just kind of gives everyone the same consequences, or just kind of give, you know, there's a place where there's responsibility, and, you know, you can't just do whatever you want with no repercussions. You know, it's a fair system for everybody. And just, you know, that's the thing about when you see how, as a first generation kid of a first, you know what I mean? Your parents came from another country. You know, maybe if you weren't one of us, you would maybe not know what your parents went through or what the lineage before them went through. But we've seen our parents, and I saw my grandma, you know, how hard she worked and how hard my parents worked. And, you know, what they, just thinking about coming to a new country and just starting a whole new life is just crazy. So I can't imagine doing that with my kids now, just taking off, you know, it sounds nuts. So just what they did to take a risk. And to work as hard as they did, it just makes you so angry. You know, it's sad, but it's, you know, and I thought when I found Bitcoin, the same way that you had to find an answer and it lit a fire under you, I think for me, it was, there had to be a solution. Like, there had to be something. Like, there wasn't any way that I wasn't going to find something. There has to be. And this was it. You know, it's like Bitcoin was the way. And I was determined to find that way. Like, there, and it's just crazy to think that you're living through a time, you know, that in the past, you know, a different version of me in a similar situation would have felt the same way and not found a way. There wouldn't have been a way out. But I'm here now, and I could do that because I looked, or because I listened, you know, and I was determined to, you know, again, help my parents, you know. And it's not something that you really, like, I don't really talk about it. You know, if my parents watch my podcasts, you know, I don't think they watch all my episodes, but, you know, you don't want them to, you know, feel bad or think that they did anything wrong, because they didn't. You know, it wasn't their fault. You know, they were hard workers, and it was, they did everything right. You know, it was just rigged, you know, rigged system. So, and it just, that's why it makes you so sad. And that's why you want to, you know, make better financial decisions for them. And, you know, Bitcoin is something where you can exit that financial gymnastics that's a circus.
Yeah, completely. I mean, we can all sit there and be like, I wish I was earlier. I wish I was earlier. But we all are so early. And I'm so grateful that I did find it, because sometimes I do have those thoughts in my head where, like, if I didn't go down this path and start learning about it, where would I be? Like, would I would probably still be working as a news reporter. I would probably be feeling, again, very negative about where the world is going. I don't think that I would be, for some reason, looking at content about gold or something. Like, if Bitcoin didn't even exist, right, I would like to think I would probably pick the second best, which is gold, I guess. But I don't know where I would be. It's just so funny, like, how life works. And I'm so grateful that I was open-minded enough to start going down the rabbit hole. But to your point, I think when you have pain points, especially with your family and economics, you know, you grew up poor, or you saw your parents lose everything, like, that is something that piques your interest when you hear about a potential solution or something that addresses the money and the fundamental corrupt in the system. So I'm very, very grateful that somehow Bitcoin found me, or I found Bitcoin.
When you said that, you imagine, you know, what would you have done if you didn't find this? My lips started, like, tingling. I felt like I got numb in the face for a second. I'm like, oh my God, imagine. You know, that's just a crazy thought to think, like, you know, where you're at now as far as understanding and how, you know, the role you're playing, and, you know, just that could all be, you know, just not thinking about being part of any of that. It's wild. But when it comes to things like, you know, with my, you know, as far as a small business, me and my mom own a small business. You know, we own a hair salon in Chicago. And just seeing, I think that was another eye-opening part, was not just seeing how hard my parents worked, but just seeing that my mom started this business at such a young age, 18 years old, she started. And she's kept this place, and it was busy to the point where she's like a legend of hair. You know, she would be working till 2-3 in the morning some nights. You know, she was, you know, four days a week. She wasn't working 7 days a week, but she would work like crazy hours. I don't know how she would stand on these like high heels all day long. She's insane. Like, I don't know. I think she doesn't have a pain sensor in her body or something. But it was, you know, just seeing how she had this business all these years, you know, still has. But just seeing the changes since I started working with her, you know, it goes from people being busy, or you know, us being busy at the salon, people having tons of places to go, people spending money, shopping, vacations, all these things. And then just seeing how a small business can take such a hit economically, especially since COVID, I noticed the biggest change. And it feels like you are just trying to stay above water. you know, and it is sad and it is not fair, you know, because, you know, and my mom loves her job. Like she would love to work, you know, every day of her life. Like she loves talking to people and just being with people. But just knowing how hard it is to, you know, you walk a fine line as a small business, as a restaurant, as a service, you know, anything. It's like you're being attacked, you know, in this country. It feels like to me, you know, just you try to raise your prices. Now you have less customers coming in because now it's too expensive for them to be able to come in as often. So they have to cut back. And then that also does bad things to society because people used to take care of themselves. Now they do it less often because you don't have the money to go do it. It's the people that are the service providers. Now you can't raise prices because people won't come in. So you're working harder for less money and it costs you more every day to live. So really, instead of a 40% decrease in, you know, like let's say inflation went up 40% since 2020 or something as far as the cost of living. And then you think about how much a small business is taking a hit as far as the amount of business. That's a humongous hit. You know, it's like a life change as far as how you thought your life was going, you know? So that was part of the panic mode that was like, what is going on right now? You know, and that was around the time, you know, thinking about, you know, that was in 2020 when I found Bitcoin, but it was thinking about not only from two sides of it, like thinking about my parents and the business and what's going to happen to them. And then my kids, it's like, you feel all this weight, you know, and it's not a good feeling, you know? So it's just, I feel grateful and hopeful. And I just want to share that with people because I feel like as scary as things seem, I'm happy that I found someplace that I could save money again.
Well, that is so well said. And it captures the experience that so many people in this country have had. One of my early chapters is called Everyone is Working Harder for Less. And it is really exactly that, because when they expand the money supply and they intervene in what is supposed to be a free market, again, it causes prices to go up. And for the average person, their wages and income are not keeping up. And we've seen that across the board. Again, the working class has really just been hollowed out. And what was easy for a previous generation to afford on just one income, now you need several incomes, right? And there's just this pressure on everyone in the household to provide. And of course, everyone's terrified of AI, because if AI is going to take everyone's job, like where's anyone's income going to come from? And I try to break all of this down simply. I make an analogy to Monopoly in the book where, you know, sometimes people say life is a game, right? Well, who would want to play a game where the rules are rigged to advantage certain players, right? No one would like that game unless you're one of those specially advantaged players. And that's essentially what we're living in. So I make this analogy that, you know, let's say we're playing Monopoly and we go around the board, but then all of a sudden there's a moment where the players who have acquired the most assets and the most properties on the board, the banker comes in and says, you know what? I'm going to double the money supply, but I'm only going to hand it to the people with properties. So now all of a sudden they have more money to vie for properties, right? And the people that are going around that don't have them, all the prices have just gone up and they don't know what to do about it, because now some people just got money handed to them. And that is literally what our system is doing every time the system creates more money and injects it into the banking sector. And what goes up first? Assets, properties, real estate, stocks. And if you're not holding them, you're starting to drown. You're starting to fall behind. Recently, there have been some really good comparisons made online. If you change the ruler from dollars to gold, that the average person is now literally experiencing far lower wages than 100 years ago. Because if you price it in, you know, how many hours needed to purchase an ounce of gold, we've experienced wage deflation. So this also makes you more sympathetic to the cries for higher minimum wage and just the plight of people who are working so hard for small, you know, incomes. It's like, well, I'm literally working for less than the same person doing this job was making like 100 years ago. So I think, again, like we have to address that, because you can only imagine what kind of society we create when everyone is working harder or feels like they're working harder, but they're actually bringing home less and they're not as rewarded or compensated. So it isn't the situation that it used to be for the hair salon where, you know, people are friendly and going out and spending money and supporting each other and thinking about, you know, community and doing things to, you know, make themselves feel better and be healthy and look great. No. They're now in survival mode again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, where can I cut? Where can I make cuts? Can I raise my prices? Oh no, that person's raising prices. They're greedy. Right? Like it just turns us against each other, pits us right. against each other. So we need to fix the system. Otherwise, it's just going to get worse and worse.
And it's so lopsided because when I remember hearing about how the government is more afraid of deflation than inflation, but then when you hear about wage deflation, you think, okay, that's already happening on one side to the people and they're struggling. So it reminds you of back to the Monopoly game when you're talking about the banker. Let's say my kids are playing Monopoly and my oldest kid is, I'm taking all the assets. I'm doing whatever I want with the money in the bank because I'm the oldest brother and you guys can't do anything about it. My other kids are going to quit playing. You know, like people are just going to like, if you just think of it like realistically, like who's going to want to play the game anymore?
And you don't respect the winners. That's one thing that I've mentioned on other shows is like today we have this total anger and animosity against the people at the top, right? The CEOs and the billionaires, everyone hates them because most people feel like they didn't earn it, right? Like you got that in a way that's unfair, or you were greedy, or you rigged the game, or you took advantage of the system. But if we had a fair set of rules and everyone had to compete by the same set of rules, no matter where you come from, then the people who win in that game are more of a source of inspiration, right? It's like, how were they able to succeed? Well, they clearly used the resources at their disposal and they were smart or innovative. And like, how can I be more like that, right? Like, that's the kind of world, again, that I want to see and create, as opposed to a world where there's a few very, very wealthy people who were just kind of in the right place. And that's not to say that, you know, all the people that have money or businesses or are CEOs today didn't earn it. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying it is easier in this system, especially mm-hmm. when, for example, you're working as a CEO for a brand that is a monopoly. And monopolies are very difficult to form in a truly free market. I just did a great episode with Jeff Booth about that. Mm. Some people equate capitalism with monopolies. No, crony capitalism has monopolies and they grow bigger and bigger and bigger and get special access and lobby efforts and influence policymakers in a true free market. They would have a very difficult time because there would always be competition that's kind of like checking their power.
Yeah, that's so true. It's all just a fabricated, you know, it's just not real. It's not based on truth, you know, and Bitcoin is based on truth. And that's why when you just have, you know, when you, for me, I don't know if this makes me a mean person, but I think it's kind of, I like that I can laugh at things now, but I heard an episode of Mailbag Money with Jack Mahler's and he was saying, you know, Jerome Powell's making hostage videos now, you know, and just like the way he said it, I'm just like, I never thought there would be a time in my life where I'm laughing at something like that. Like that is like my comedy, you know, it's fun. It's kind of funny because you know that, okay, this is what it is. You know, it's a circus, you know, and at least you're not stuck in it right now. Like you could watch the show instead of being part of the circus, you know, but that's why you can kind of laugh at it. But that's why you want to tell people how insane that is. You know, like how are people like the Fed and what the Fed does and all these things? It's just like, how is this and people not believing in treasuries anymore? Yes, it's like some people, I don't know, how much more in your face does it have to be? And I guess sort of, you know, the memes are great. And maybe that's what will kind of get through to people. Yeah, on a wide range is the meme news, you know, in a way.
Well, first of all, most people don't even know who the Fed chair is.
Right, yeah.
It's something I didn't pay attention to when I was, you know, in my early days as a reporter. Bitcoin forced me to be more aware of all of these positions and roles. I didn't see that video, but that is really a funny analogy by Jack Mahler's. Mm-hmm. But it does put a spotlight on just how fragile and political this whole system is getting. And again, I mean, kind of to the points we've already made in this conversation, it's like that man sets the price of money for the world, for the
world
reserve currency, right? Like most people around the world, most debt is denominated in dollars, most trade is conducted in dollars, although it's changing a little bit. But like this man and a committee of people we do not elect, set the interest rates, and can literally hit a button, make a phone call, hit a button, and like all of a sudden trillions more are injected into the deposits of the biggest banks. Like, isn't that crazy to think about? Like, how this is a system that we designed, and it has real consequences, and people are starting to feel it, and people are starting to look for alternatives. And so I know that Bitcoin, again, has not been performing as well as people would like it to right now, especially with several things outperforming it and surging. But it will take time. People really don't understand. I mean, we are so early. Most people don't pay attention to Bitcoin, and they have all sorts of wrong ideas about it, misconceptions. So it'll take years, and this is going to be slower than I think some people want it to be, but it doesn't mean that it's not the future, and it's not the most meaningful mission that any of us could be on.
I love that you said that. And it is. And the thing is sometimes when I think about the Bitcoin price and how so many people have it as a long-term savings account, and how it's a place where, you know, you say, I'm not spending this, or I'm going to spend and replace, or I'm saving this for the future. This is not something I'm, you know what I mean? It's not like you're saving. It's not your checking account. It's your savings. So, but when I think about the people that need Bitcoin the most, it's the ones, you know, that need to know basis. You had to find an answer because you were struggling. So the people that do save in it or have been in it for whatever number of years you've been in Bitcoin, and you saved your money. But when you have this type of environment that you're living through, wages going down, life costing more, taxes for houses going astronomical, people wanting to start a life, and how long are you going to hold off on your life to start a family, whatever it is. So there's so many people that found Bitcoin, but eventually have to sell because this economy is strangling people to try to squeeze out as much. I feel like that's how I kind of see it. So, and in my eyes, I spend less, you know, I don't overspend on things I don't need anymore. I've changed my mindset on how I think I need to spend money, but there are times where you have to sell a little bit, but then when I have more, I go and buy, like, I just save it back in Bitcoin as soon as I can, because I know, you know, but I know that there are people, you know, who have had to sell amounts of Bitcoin they didn't really want to. So when people say those things like, who's even selling Bitcoin right now? Well, if they have to live their life and the government is making it so hard for people to get by, I mean, there's going to be selling pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've already seen it. I think we could see more of it depending on how volatile things get. Again, a lot of people are struggling. That's why things are so lopsided too, because they tell us things are great, no matter who's in office. By the way, this isn't a political statement. Every administration says the economy is doing great. And then you really look and it's like, okay, well, stocks are at an all-time high, but you have all these delinquencies and people are late on credit cards and they have to push out student loan payments even further. And people are losing their jobs and AI, you know, there are so many factors. This is such a highly complex economy with moving parts around the world. And it's really hard to try to trade around it or predict. And you just have to do your best, save as much as possible, and save in a form of money that can't be debased. And if you have to sell, you know, sometimes that's what you have to do. I know I'm personally, like, I'm literally about to share my journey of taking out my first Bitcoin-backed loan because I'm trying not to sell my Bitcoin. I'm going to take out a small, it's going to be small. It's not like I'm borrowing a lot, but I want to try it because some of these tools will slowly emerge and I want to experiment with them. So I want to see like what that process is like, and you don't have to make monthly payments. You can actually pay it all back in a year. I'm going to be using Ledin. So I'll be sharing that journey too, because there's new tools that are coming out, and obviously the goal is to try not to sell your Bitcoin.
Right. Yes. I love that, because you don't want it to be one of those moments where you get caught offsides to the point where it does decide to rally. And you know, not that we're training Bitcoin or traders, a lot of us, you know, maybe a lot are, but you know, if you're not trading, you're just saving in it mainly. It's you don't want to say I had to sell it and then now you have to buy it back at double the price or something and just feel like you're kicking yourself again, you know, because so many people get burned by it, but you learn. And this is a way that's a great point, that there are tools like this now where you don't have to feel like you have to sell it, you know, so that is great. I think even Ledin, you said, and then even Strike is doing that. And I think it's a bunch of other companies are offering Bitcoin back loans. I think even Salt Lending, you know, there's a few. So great point to make. Yes, I would like to in the future, you know, my kids are getting older. I have almost 16-year-old at some point. I'll drive my same old car as long as I have to, but at some point my kid's going to probably need a car. So, you know, maybe a Bitcoin back loan is the way to go. So, but the thing is there are so many, you know, as much as I don't pay attention to media, which I'm sure you being in media, maybe you look at it and you think, I don't know what you think when you look at the media these days. But me, I'm just, again, I don't think I watch news. I get my news. My husband's like he'll send me the memes and that's where I get my news. I just see like something funny and I'm like, oh, okay, that's a funny meme. Now I know what's going on in the world. And I think that's a great way because you need to laugh. You can't just be stressed out about everything. But I don't know sometimes where things are headed. But when I hear some of the stuff that's going on, you just don't understand. Like, is there a plan or is this all improv? Like, I wonder sometimes because when you think about the whole Greenland talk and like Canada's going to be a U.S. state. And then I think about Venezuela and what happened there. And it's like, is this supposed to be like a is there a plan for the U.S. to kind of just encapsulate all of this area of the world? But then I laugh to myself because it's like we're afraid of other countries invading and coming closer and war, different things. And I guess Russia is a big concern. But then it's like, I mean, Alaska is connected by a massive land right to Russia. I mean, I thought there was at least some water between us or something. I didn't really realize it was a big, massive land. And yes, it's cold, so if people want to travel over to the U.S., but it's not like they're doing anything about that, you know, heavy military security. So I kind of laugh because I'm like, what is this? Is it a, it's almost a distraction, just to get people to focus on stuff. Or I don't know what the game plan is, but it just kind of makes me laugh to think, is there a game plan? I don't even know. This is crazy.
Well, your comment about is it a plan or is it improv is just, it's a great one because I actually just talked about that for like almost 20 minutes with Luke Groman on the show I just released. So everyone should check that out because that's exactly what I asked him. I mean, some of the things just feel really chaotic and not thought out. But at the same time, if you kind of dig deeper, you're like, maybe there is a strategy behind this in this game of chess that we're playing geopolitically. I mean, they never tell us the full story, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's always something in the background and some of that is for national security reasons and some of it is for narrative reasons, but we're not privy to some of that information. Like with Venezuela, I did a fascinating interview with Tracy Shuchart, who shared information about how that was something that the Pentagon had been planning for a long time and essentially like recommended it to the president and then the president signed off on it. And really it came down to critical minerals and our three adversaries being China, Russia, and Iran creating operations there that they felt were strategically to our disadvantage. And then when it comes to Greenland, again, like I really think that this is ultimately about resources, critical minerals, and we have to look beyond some of the headlines and learn a little bit more, I think, about like where things have gone in our fiat economy with things like our military. And this is something that Luke Groman does a great job talking about, how we've become so over-reliant on China for materials that we use to build weapons and things that have military applications. So we are so hollowed out that we are behind on delivering equipment and building the things that we do need to defend ourselves. And we've like literally shifted all that leverage and power to China, which makes everything or refines the minerals that we need to make everything. And it's crazy, too, because if you look back at history, the idea of buying Greenland has been around since like the 1800s and various presidents tried to do it and it didn't work out. But like, it makes me think about like rewinding time a couple of decades or centuries when we added different states or we made the Louisiana Purchase or we purchased Alaska, right? Like, what were those ideas? So I don't have like a position on it because I don't know enough, but I just think everything that's happening is really a signpost of the bigger story, which is that the global system is changing. The dollar system is changing and the consequences of so many of our actions are starting to bear fruit right now. And so I think that strategically, a lot of countries are thinking about things in a different way. And we'll see. I just pray and hope that nothing breaks out into truly like a more violent and escalated situation, because we can't afford that in a nuclear arms, you know, type of world mm-hmm. that we live in. So we'll see, I guess. But any given day, you know, there could be some other crazy announcement and it'll rattle markets for sure.
Yeah, I love how you said that, because yes, framing it from a realistic, strategic, you know, national, like what's best for the U.S., you know, that seems to be the case. But when you also think about, you know, the growing tension globally, and the risk of nuclear words being thrown around constantly, all I ever think about is that it ends in a stalemate because, you know, even if it's somebody you think is your enemy, they still have family and kids that they would love to see grow up, and nobody wants to annihilate everyone they care about. So I think that it's like a game of chicken or just who's going to, and it's going to just end up like a lot of threat. I don't know. That's just, I don't know. I just don't see how that could actually happen because everyone knows it could just be catastrophic. So
that's why, again, it's really about resources, money, power. Like that's what it's about, even though they say it's other things.
And when it goes back to the Monopoly game idea, when it comes to those resources, it's the same idea as taking the assets when it comes to the houses on the board. But if you have, you know, minerals and things that you need that are on the board, then the U.S. is sort of the big brother in the game that's going to collect all the stuff it needs because it needs it. And then how long before people quit again? You know, it's just kind of the same idea because it's like you're kind of cheating because you can, because you're the big brother or whatever, and you're just going to do what you want because you can do it. And how and when do people start turning on you? And then eventually, I just still think it ends in the stalemate. I just feel like no matter what, it's Bitcoin wins.
You bring up a really, really great point because this is, I mean, we're only on the front wave of this. Like we've not seen, I think, the full passing of what's to come yet. But it's like if we need stuff, the stuff that we use to build factories, the stuff that we use for military applications, the radar systems, the EVs, the telephones, right? How do we pay for it? Because we're printing the money out of thin air. And so someone has to be willing to accept money that's been printed out of thin air. And that is like literally the world, how the world operated for the last 50 years. It's just we print it, you accept it, and business as usual, right? And certain people get very, very wealthy off that system. Well, now it's like shifting and it's like, okay, well, I can make the stuff, but I don't want your printed money. You're going to have to give me something else for it. And I think right now it's moving towards gold, but I think in the future it's going to be Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah. It's like a shifting wave of change. You know, it's going to the gold and to the resources and the minerals, not just houses, because we know they're inflated in price, you know, so it's moving toward real things, but there's nothing, even though people say you can't touch Bitcoin, there's nothing harder than Bitcoin as far as how much there is. So it is
the energy component. Yep.
Yes. I love this mind exercise. I feel like that's what, instead of mental circus gymnastics of manipulation, it's mental gymnastics as far as exercising our minds and thinking things that are actually just common sense sort of ideas, but just, it's kind of fun to play around it, you know. I mean, talking about things, but not getting serious about them. I think that's the thing with me. I don't mind mentioning some of the stuff going on in the world, but I don't let it, you know, consume my day, or I don't, you know, worry about it too much because things change. I feel like, I don't know if you think the same with media too. Like you said, back in the day with, you weren't around for the Louisiana Purchase, but you know, if they had social media then, but when you see news now, it seems like it's the biggest deal. And then a week later, you know, it's nobody knows.
Think about it. Like, could you imagine if we had Twitter, X, Instagram, all that we have online when they were doing the Louisiana Purchase or purchasing Hawaii or purchasing Alaska? Do you know how many people would be up in arms? But ask any of those people, like, are you glad we have Alaska? They'd probably be like, yeah, of course we're glad we have Alaska. We have such recency bias, and we have this tool where we could just vent whatever we want. We could be armchair quarterbacks pretending we're experts in all of it. Right? When you take a step back and have perspective, because someday we're going to look back on this and like, it's important now in the moment and it's crazy and it's all this guy said this. And then you don't even remember or think about because there's something new happening.
Yeah. And that's what Bitcoin feels like. Bitcoin feels like it's just there doing its thing, not paying attention.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is a lot of noise. I'm just going to continue on with my day. And that's what it's just kind of like. It's weird how Bitcoin can be a teacher as far as how to, you know, have that patience and have that consistency in life. But is really fun to think about. I love that you said armchair quarterback.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I mean, we see a lot of that online.
That's such a great, I'm going to remember that one. Well, thank you so much, Natalie. This has been amazing. I'm sure you have plenty to do today, so I won't keep you any longer. I really, really liked this conversation. This was so much fun. And I am looking forward to the virtual summit. And you guys can find that at, is it Women in Bitcoin?
Yes. Come register for the summit. It's open to all. It's free and we're so excited. Hopefully this will be the kickoff event for more summits, more digital conferences, and hopefully in more in-person events as well.
Yes. And check out her book too, Bitcoin is for Everyone. You can find it, you know, online, Amazon, you can Kindle it, you can do e-reader stuff, you know, you could do all this stuff. So check out her book. It's amazing. She really did a great job. And thank you so much, Natalie.
Thank you.
Have a great day.